From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Elephants being killed for ivory is old news. Back to King Leopold and Heart of Darkness days. Elephants being wiped out for ivory is the headline of our time. A surging market in China and beyond for tusks and trinkets. Industrial-scale, military-style poaching, slaughter. Some call it genocide and say the elephants know it's happening. This hour on Point, the slaughter now and considering the end of elephants. You can join the conversation. Are we really going to do this? Watch while these great, intelligent, irreplaceable animals are butchered toward extinction. How can elephants survive the international ivory trade? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's the sound of forest elephants in Central Africa, reported 11 years ago by NPR's Radio Expeditions. Exactly the terrain where they are being wiped out right now. In January, a report on CNN, ITN correspondent Angus Walker posed as a businessman secretly filming meetings with illegal ivory traders in China. Here he is with a Chinese seller and an interpreter.
This one is being cut when the elephant is still alive.
But
how do you know that?
Yes,
sir. Color.
Right.
This one, this tusk, has been cut while the elephant's still alive. So many ultimately dying in that trade. With us first today from Carmel Valley, California, is Samantha Strindberg. She is a biostatistician and conservation scientist with the Wildlife Conservation Society, one of the co-authors of a newly released study with some eye-popping numbers on the surge in elephant slaughter in Central Africa. Study titled Devastating Decline in Forest Elephants in Central Africa. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Samantha Strindberg, thank you very much for being with us. What's the big finding from your study?
Hi, Tom. Thanks very much for having me on your show. Well, the shocking finding from our study is that we believe that in the period 2002 to 2011, which is just a decade, that we've lost 62% of forest elephants.
62% in about 10 years?
Yes, which we knew that things were not looking good for forest elephants, but even we were shocked at that number.
Now, forest elephants, you're describing them, what, in contrast to savanna or open terrain elephants, what percentage of the elephant population of Africa is traditionally forest elephants, Samantha?
Well, there's probably, again, these are approximate numbers, maybe 500,000 African elephants, and of those we believe about 100,000 and probably less by now are forest elephants. And those are, again, numbers that come with a large variation. I have to say that because I'm a statistician.
62% gone in a decade. What countries are we talking about primarily when you say Central Africa here?
Well, we focused in our study on the five main countries that have forest elephants, and that's Cameroon, the Central African Republic, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo.
It's hard to imagine how the numbers can be that high. What kind of poaching is going on, or can you tell to make such a huge slaughter possible?
Well, basically, indications we've had have in part come from counting dead elephants, and being able to say whether that dead elephant died of natural causes or whether it was illegally killed or poached. And we've seen that in particularly in Central Africa, that proportion of elephants that no longer die of natural causes but are killed by poachers has risen dramatically. And even for the other elephants in eastern or southern Africa or West Africa, those illegal killing rates are so high that basically the populations can't sustain themselves anymore and are in a precipitous decline, and the decline is most precipitous for forest elephants.
I'm reading here a report from just last week from Chad. It says poachers slaughtered 86 elephants in a single week in just this one part of one country. Armed gangs, whole like sort of platoons going in, killing not just single elephants, but herds, including 33 pregnant females with their tusks hacked out.
That was the sad thing I was going to mention. And the fact that these are no longer sort of isolated, uncoordinated efforts. They're very much organized criminal gangs that are behind these activities now. And we can tell also not only from the number of dead elephants being found, but also from the increase in illegal ivory seizures, that the problem is getting worse.
In the past decades, the number of elephants killed has doubled. The amount of ivory seized has tripled. I'm reading numbers here anyway from 15 to 25,000 elephants killed, slaughtered a year for their tusks. Samantha, what do you know about the historic population here? I mean, I see one report, this is in the Daily Mail out of London, saying that in the 1930s, there may have been 10 million elephants out there. Now we're talking under a half a million, and I'm seeing numbers as low as 300,000. Does that sound like the right framework? Has it really dropped from that drastically?
It's difficult to know exactly how many millions there were, and I'll focus more on the forest elephants, since that's what I know a little bit more about. And we can know from sort of elephant ecology that a conservative sort of number of how many elephants you might find in a square kilometer is about maybe half, even one elephant. So if you say half an elephant and you know how much habitat is available to them, you can estimate that there might have been more than a million elephants. And so if we're looking at current numbers, basically they're at about 10% of their historical numbers, and that's a conservative estimate.
These are not, by any stretch, dumb animals. We use that phrase too casually, but these are the opposite. Your group has looked at how all this killing is affecting the behavior of highly intelligent mammals here, these elephants. What did you find?
Yeah, we found they are super smart, and they try and obviously respond and avoid the danger. So they try and avoid the poachers, try and avoid the roads, and they run like the clappers when crossing sort of unprotected roads and areas, because they know they're in danger. And it's a terrible sort of image to think of these majestic animals basically sitting there like scared bunnies. It's very disturbing. And basically having been cut off more and more, isolated, and having to manage in smaller and smaller areas, not getting the resources they need. And another important point to make is that these elephants are ecologically very important to the forest themselves. They really are sort of gardeners on a vast scale. They eat, unlike savanna elephants, forest elephants eat a lot of fruit, and they distribute the seeds over many miles. And the trees obviously get the nice fertilizer to go with it, and sprout in new areas, basically keeping the forest themselves healthier. And other studies have shown that, where elephants are now no longer able to do that, the forests are in decline.
If this trajectory has not changed, Samantha, what does it mean? Does it mean elephant extinction? Does it just mean the end of wild elephants? The end of, the African population as we've, in anything like the numbers we've known? Or is extinction a possibility?
Well, certainly for the forest elephants, if these rates, if things carry on as they have, there might be a few stragglers left in 10 years' time, but we really think they will be on the brink of extinction. If we think that we've lost perhaps the region of 200,000 elephants in the last 10 years, well, then you can see where it's going in the next 10 years if they're probably under 100,000 left.
Samantha Strindberg, joining us from Carmel Valley, California, with the Wildlife Conservation Society. They put together an enormous study, found a 62% in forest elephants in Central Africa decline, 62% down in a decade. Samantha, thank you for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Brian Christie's with us now from Philadelphia, contributing writer for National Geographic. We'll talk about the work that he's done. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
We just got a minute and a half before the break, but you describe at the top of one of your recent stories the scene. This was January a year ago when raiders came into Cameroon from Chad on horseback. What happened?
It was exactly the sort of thing you described with these 89 elephant. This was another version of this same crime scene, and that's the way to look at it. It's the poachers come in on horseback, they round up the elephant, and they take them down as families. So you can see where the mothers tried to protect their young and went down. You can see the bulls, who are generally outside of these herds, where they go down independently, and they're indiscriminate. They take them all out.
100 raiders on horseback, you're right, with AK-47s and rocket-propelled grenades, and literally just mowing down whole families, whole herds.
That's right. It's heartbreaking.
You have followed this all the way to the end of the market, when the ivory, the tusks, are turned into trinkets. We're going to look at that and much more in this hour. It's a shocking kind of image. What's happening right now to elephants in Africa? We are in a spike in the slaughter, which has few precedents, and at a time when the numbers are low. Brian Christie, National Geographic, standby. There's a lot we want to learn. Here we are, Central African Republic. Forest elephants excited about a mating event there. Let them live. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about the devastating kill-off of elephants that has spun out of control in Africa. Behind me, the sound of two forest elephants greeting each other in the Central African Republic, courtesy of Cornell's Elephant Listening Project. Looking at an ivory mafia poaching ivory, slaughtering elephants on an epic scale, threatening the end of Africa's once great elephant population. Some scientists say the elephants know it. There's a lot of talk about it, but what will we do? Here was December, marking Wildlife Conservation Day. Then Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton speaking about the hunting down of endangered species, elephants, and more in this video.
Attacks on elephants and rhinos are multiplying at an alarming rate. Poaching operations are using more sophisticated weapons that threaten security and stability. By some estimates, the black market for wildlife trafficking is rivaled in size only by the illegal arms and drug trade.
And those arms being now used to hunt elephants themselves and to kill, too often, those trying to protect the elephants, people who know the elephants well. Brian Christie is with us, contributing writer from National Geographic, joins us today from Philadelphia. His story, Blood Ivory, appeared in the October issue of the magazine, the basis for the National Geographic and PBS documentary Battle for the Elephants that aired last month. You can link to the story and documentary at our website, onpointradio.org. Here's a scene from Battle for the Elephants, where a senior field officer, David Dabalin, with Save the Elephants, looks at rows of elephant skulls in Samburu, northern Kenya, and identifies them as, well, almost friends.
I knew about 75% of these animals, and I could tell you from, you know, all of them, the names. For example, this fresh Lojo here is a big bull called Pretty Boom Boom. He would actually walk and hit using his trunk on the ground, going boom, boom. So that was Pretty Boom Boom. That guy was Mandela. That was Enthusiasm. She was poached. That is Venus. She was poached. That was Resilience. He was a lovely elephant. It was very sad. But pretty much all of them are animals that we know.
Rows of the heads of elephants. They're being killed at an unprecedented rate in recent history right now, when the numbers are as small as ever. More from that documentary, Battle for Elephants. Brian Christie and a team of filmmakers traced the market for illegal ivory from Africa to Asia. His colleague, journalist Aidan Hartley, went undercover as a buyer in Tanzania. Here he is with a Tanzanian poacher.
So my friend, can you get 1,000 kilos?
1,000 kilos?
Yes. 1,000 kilos?
Yeah, but not for one day. That's for 1 week. For 1 week and a half.
Okay, so in a week you can get 1,000 kilos.
Yeah.
1,000 kilos of tusks in a single week. And here, from the same documentary with a local poacher who claims the ivory leaves the country on Chinese diplomatic planes.
The Chinese, who is coming there with a weapon,
They are taking money before to Chinese. They are taking in Tanzania to buy the stuff for them. You understand?
So the Chinese in China are sending
money here,
in order to buy ivory, which can go back on the plane.
Yeah.
Very organized.
Yes, yes.
Very organized. Flying the ivory out to Asia. Brian Christie, you trace this from Africa right into the market for this in Asia. What's driving this slaughter, Brian?
There's an easy answer, direct answer, China. The Chinese economy is the number one driver, without question, of the slaughter that's happening in Africa. And it's middle class, upper middle class Chinese who've now reached a point where they can show their wealth, and one of the ways traditionally that Chinese have demonstrated their wealth and their appreciation for art is to have ivory carvings, and that is driving the killing in Africa.
So as China's affluence has grown, so has the market for ivory trinkets and tusks.
Absolutely. It's a one-to-one correlation.
And is there any question that that's where the majority of this ivory is ending up?
No. And if there is any question, you can just look at the prices paid in China versus the prices paid for raw ivory anywhere else in the world. And the prices for in China right now for a kilo, 2.2 pounds of ivory, is about $1,300. And that figure dwarfs the prices paid in any other country. So if you are selling it in another country in the world, you're stupid.
Is there an awareness in China? I mean, we assume that people know that this traces back to a slaughter in Africa. Do Chinese buyers know this when they buy ivory tusks and trinkets, or is it just not part of the conversation there?
I think the last part. So there have been studies that have shown that Chinese aren't aware, that they think the tusks fall out like baby teeth. But I met with a pretty sophisticated slice of China, and they all knew what it took to get their tusks. And as you your recording in the beginning showed, they're even using the fact that it's blood ivory, that it's new, freshly killed ivory as a selling point.
God, it's nauseating. There's a little bit, there's some effort to try and raise awareness in China. I've got a commercial here, Brian, produced by the wildlife protection group WildAid. It's been airing on some television broadcasts in China, I guess. Shows a bullet in slow motion shooting from the tip of a rifle barrel toward an elephant. And then Chinese basketball star, internationally famous shot blocker Yao Ming, leaps up and appears to slap the bullet away, saving the elephant. Speaking in Mandarin, he tells his Chinese viewers, when the buying stops, the killing stops. Overwhelmingly, says my guest Brian Christie, it's going to China, but let's not be too finger-pointing about this. Here from 2011, U.S. federal agents seized a huge haul, more than a ton of ivory, at New York's JFK Airport on its way from African middlemen to a Philadelphia art store owner. Here was a report on local Philadelphia CBS, the affiliate there.
It was an international illegal smuggling operation, the U.S. government claims, that preyed on one of Africa's most majestic endangered natural treasures, elephant tusks. Investigators contend the tusks were all being sold out of this old city store on 3rd Street, just north of Market. The owner, 68-year-old Victor Gordon, has been arrested and is facing several felony counts related to the alleged smuggling ring.
That report out of Philadelphia. Brian Christie, stand by in Philadelphia. Richard Ruggiero joins us right now from Washington, chief of the Near East, South Asia, and Africa branch of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Division of International Conservation. He's been studying elephants in the wild for the last 32 years. Richard Ruggiero, thanks so much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. It's great to be here.
The news just seems uniformly bad. You tell us if it's otherwise. And on top of the horrible numbers surging here as the market has surged, we have been reminded recently by you and others that I don't know how much difference it would make, but that elephants are incredibly intelligent and it appears aware, Richard, of what's going on. There's a kind of elephant genocide and they know it. Is that fair to say?
I think it's absolutely fair to say, that with the caveat that the term genocide is obviously created to talk about people, but I think a very accurate portrayal or description of what's going on now, that elephants are being sought out and systematically destroyed.
What's the evidence of their awareness?
Well, you know, it's easy to communicate or to understand elephants as being intelligent beings. That's very obvious by much research and anecdotal information, and certainly intelligence is a very important part of the equation that makes elephants special. It makes them something other than just another species of wildlife that's being exploited or should be protected. But that elephants have emotions. They have sophisticated emotions, very well-developed senses of community, of family. They have very sophisticated communication systems. Some people think, and I'm one of them, that elephants are as emotional as humanity, as people. And so combining their enormous intelligence, their emotional capacity, and their ability to communicate it, they're critical thinkers. They're problem solvers. They probably have what can be described as a theory of mind, where they actually can understand how people behave and think and act accordingly.
What have you witnessed on that front, Richard, in your many years in elephant land?
Dozens and dozens of examples. Early on in my living with elephants, and we're going back to the early 1980s, the herds and the group I was studying for my doctorate were relatively tranquil. They were more or less behaving what you'd call normally. As the, unfortunately, the same individuals, I shouldn't say individuals, but the same type of hunter, mounted horsemen from Sudan, who in those days actually used spears more than Kalashnikovs. They did carry them, but they used those for self-defense. They actually would chase elephants on horseback and spear them in the hindquarters to hobble them. And this is a long and arduous process accompanied by a lot of communication, of elephants screaming, of panic. And this threat that very quickly was communicated among elephants led to a drastic change in behavior, a change in the emotions that they would display, a change in their behavior that's adapting to this danger. And it's very clear that they were able to make an association that some people are extremely dangerous, they're trying to kill us, and they want our ivory. And I've seen examples of how they treat the skeletons or the corpses, the carcasses of their fallen comrades, how they mourn, how the opposite of the joy and the joie de vivre, the loving attention they give each other, we saw it transformed into being very defensive, very frightened, and probably what you'd call post-traumatic stress syndrome.
I mean, all slaughters of animals have their, I guess, in a way, a moral consequence, but is there something particularly grotesque when humans, an intelligent species, are wiping out elephants, an intelligent species?
Intelligent, yes. Emotional, to me, is the point that they can connect the dots, that they suffer psychologically, emotionally from this on a vast scale. And you can see it. You can read it in these elephants. I travel a lot in Africa, and unfortunately, I think some of the estimates of elephant casualties are maybe appropriately from a statistical standpoint, but they are conservative. I think elephants are being more impacted than the numbers even show. But we have to get behind the numbers. Behind the numbers are the suffering of animals and the unfair slaughter of animals who really do understand this. They behave. A friend and colleague, Joyce Poole, just related a tragic story. She just returned from Kenya a day or two ago and was speaking with her Maasai friends, who lamented that, you know, when the elephants come down on that old trail, as they do every year, they no longer come down during the day trumpeting their arrival. They now slip down quietly at night. Mm. And when we look at the tracks of these animals, we only see small footprints. And that, I think, says it all.
The numbers gone and the joy gone. Brian Christie in Philadelphia, just in the last couple of weeks, we've seen this big meeting of, CITES, the International Trade in Exotic Species Group in Bangkok. I mean, this news and this wave after wave of killing is so infuriating. Is something happening at the level of international organizations to stop this? Is anything happening that is equivalent in scale to the what looks like a crisis?
The CITES meeting lasted 2 weeks. Elephants were the dominant species on the agenda because of what's happening to them. There was some good news. The member countries agreed to DNA test seizures, large seizures of 500 kilos or more, so we can try to get an understanding of exactly which hotspots are being poached the worst. That's a positive. There was a commitment to look at demand reduction as a criterion for judging whether countries are enforcing their laws. That latter point was something that a lot of the pro-elephant people celebrated, but the reality is unless the Chinese government commits to stopping the ivory trade, any kind of advertisement of the kind you showed with Yao Ming, those sorts of things require a deeper commitment. They require the Chinese government, who's the major player, and that's something lost in these discussions, is it's not just China who is trafficking ivory. It's the Chinese government.
How
the
so?
Chinese
what do you mean?
Sure. The Chinese government owns the world's largest ivory carving factory. They are funding the training of a new generation of ivory carvers in China. They were the major buyer at the one-time sale that took place in 2008. And so they have a stake in the game, unlike anyone else.
The Chinese government itself. I mean, I've seen this Chinese ivory carving for years and years. But at this point, when the slaughter is this high and the elephant numbers remaining are getting so low, I do not understand it. I mean, Chinese officials know what's going on in the world. These are top informed worldly people. They just don't care. Is it just to make a yen, a buck?
It's you know, if you look at the numbers, I spent a lot of time with the Chinese government and with the Chinese Ivory Carvers Association over this three-year investigation that we did for National mm-hmm. Geographic. And I asked the very same question. And some of the answers I got were, you know, there are 300 to 400 ivory carvers in all of China, was their estimate. And only 10 of those are master carvers, the sort of nationally celebrated tops of their
so
art
what?
Form.
That answer seems like a dodge to me. If they know they're bringing in the ivory and the elephants are disappearing, don't they care? Do they only want to see them in paintings and photos?
Exactly. It's a money. This is carved gold. Yeah, I didn't mean to suggest that those numbers were worth. I was going to point out that those numbers were so insignificant. It's got to be something else. And that something else is corruption. It is profiteering by extremely wealthy. If we look at the effort to protect the elephant, we have not seen a single kingpin. With all the elephants we've discussed being killed, with all the money that's in this game, with all the difficulty it is to move something as large as an elephant
sure.
tusk by the ton, and we haven't identified a single kingpin.
I say that's bring that on. I say bring them down. Brian Christie in Philadelphia, please stand by. National Geographic, Richard Ruggiero with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. 32 years following elephants. We're following right now. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the devastating kill-off of elephants that has spun out of control in Africa. An ivory mafia poaching ivory, slaughtering elephants on an epic scale, threatening the end of Africa's once great elephant population. Some scientists say the elephants know it and feel it. These are highly intelligent, and my guest Richard Ruggiero says emotional animals suffering something like a genocide right now. Maybe 20,000, 25,000, maybe more being killed every year at this point. A 62% loss of Central Africa's forest elephant population just in the last 10 years. Maybe 10 million in 1930s, maybe 500,000 or less now, and you just look at those numbers and where they're headed. Richard Ruggiero is chief of the Near East, South Asia, and Africa branch of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Division of International Conservation. Been looking at elephants for 32 years. He's with us from Washington. From Philadelphia, Brian Christie's here, contributing writer for National Geographic, has followed this thing all the way from Africa right to the markets where these are sold, where the demand is produced, above all in China. Not only in China, but above all there. There are groups trying. Wild Aid has put out this this ad featuring stars, different stars. Jackie Chan, Richard Branson. Here's one with basketball player Tyson Chandler of the New York Knicks.
Bigger. Stronger. And more domineering than any other. Elephants are the centers of the animal kingdom. But unfortunately today, they're under attack. Tens of thousands are being killed each year just for their ivory. So please support conservation and never buy products made from ivory. Because when the buying stops, the killing can too.
How intelligent are they? Here's some fascinating video. This is out of South Korea. Koshik, it's a 22-year-old elephant in a South Korean zoo, not free in Africa, but became a media sensation when this elephant, Koshik, apparently learned to say a few Korean words. I don't know, but by putting his trunk inside his mouth, able to say words for hello, good, no, sit down, lie down. You hear the interaction with the elephant and the zoo man here. Well, Koreans hear an elephant talking. Last May, then Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman John Kerry spoke before the committee on the plight of elephants.
How shockingly destructive and historically shameful it would be if we did nothing while a great species was criminally slaughtered into extinction. And yet here we are in the midst of one of the most tragic and outrageous assaults on our shared inheritance that I've seen in my lifetime, where an elephant's dead ivory is prized over its living condition, where corruption feeds on its body and soul, and where money only makes matters worse.
Now Secretary of State John Kerry there. Senator, we'll see what he does as Secretary of State. Richard Bryan, so much listener response here. Maria says, this is so upsetting, it makes me ashamed to be a human being. I know that feeling. Scott says, send in the drones, I guess, to go after the poachers. Geraldine says, shoot the poachers. Can I? I mean, everybody wonders, what do you actually do about this? 800-423-8255. Charles in Lexington, Kentucky. Charles, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Well, what do you know?
I just wanted to shed some insight as to increasing the scope of consequences for this situation. I have a family member who is a taxidermist, and he travels around the world. And through his profession, he's gone to Africa several times, and he's told me on accounts of how whenever they harvest these tusks, what they'll do is they'll leave the elephant there, and as a result, it'll cause for local tribes to turn on each other and to actually kill each other in attempts to harvesting the meat from the elephant. So not only is the elephant going extinct, but it's also having repercussions on the communities there. So I just wanted to set that insight and see if the guest speaker had any commentary on that, any...
Absolutely. We'll do it, Charles. I appreciate your call. Richard, there's social consequences for the tribes in these areas. Also, big consequences, as this latest story came out, for the forests themselves. The elephants described as kind of forest gardeners as they move seeds around and open clearings in the forest that keep these big carbon sinks, which we need to absorb CO2, keep them healthy.
Well, I think an important point that's more related to what you said than the question of our listener is that many traditional people, communities, depend on natural resources such as forest resources. When elephants are removed from the equation, as a friend and colleague Mike Fay once put it, the forest does not make sense without elephants. And that basically is about the close evolutionary relationship between elephant activities and the structure and productivity of the forest. Forests overgrow in the absence of elephants to the point where other animals, including people, can't even circulate. They become very difficult to walk through. Elephants expose saline or salty soils for other animals to take advantage of. They create gaps in the forest that allow sunlight to the ground, thereby allowing the growth of vegetation that's accessible to smaller animals. So there's a complex web of life that has co-evolved with elephants and their behavior. And frankly, people have too in these forests. One of the most obvious signs is when you walk through the forest, you walk on trails. People walk on trails. Mm. Those trails were first created by elephants, then people use them, and then, unfortunately, sometimes we see roads being built on them.
Brian Christie, these slaughter numbers are getting people riled up and thinking radically. I mean, the kind of thing we see from CITES, the efforts to rein in the international trade, it feels as though that's gone on for a long time now. And yet here we are with these record-breaking numbers of deaths and more sort of industrialized, militarized, mechanized than ever. Are people thinking out of the box more radically about this? I mean, our listeners are saying, bring on the drones, you know, kill the poachers. What's the frontier of thinking about how to stop this, Brian, before it just tips into something irretrievable?
Well, you are seeing some backwaters in CITES pushing their way forward, and those backwaters are law enforcement. So you've seen a parallel organization growing called IQIC, which is the International Consortium to Combat Wildlife Crime. That is composed and led by some of the same people at CITES. It's a nascent effort, and the fear I have is that it will just be another bureaucratic meeting on law enforcement. But the real answer is law enforcement. There has for a long time been a shoot-to-kill policy among rangers in the field across Africa, and that hasn't done much to stop it.
They're completely outgunned these days, aren't they? Even evidence of African militaries coming in, even by helicopter, to do these big poaching jobs. Some rangers are going to have a tough time against them.
Absolutely. Yeah, these are the equivalent of, you know, sticks against missiles sort of scenario, always outgunned. Yeah, we need to. I mean, one way to look at it is to look at the drug trade. Instead of talking about elephants, let's swap in cocaine, and instead of China, swap in the United States, and say, are the techniques we're using? Would a stop using just say no to drugs campaign would that be enough to stop a cocaine trafficking issue in the United States? It's not enough in China. You know, people tend to look at they want to go after the poacher, and that they certainly deserve a lot of attention. But it's, you know, this is, as you've pointed out very well, this is a corporate level, commercial scale slaughter that's going on. And that commercial scale, the kingpin for that is in China
I mean, if we're not more successful at this than we have been at stopping cocaine, then it looks to me like elephants are in big, big trouble. I mean, some of our listeners are even saying, hey, you know, watch the finger pointing at China. No different than the American appetite here, the Daily Buzzherd writes on our website. No different than the American appetite for legal South American drugs. Fingers point, but the pot calling the kettle black here, isn't it? Well, yeah, I guess there are human consequences, certainly, for the drug cultivation and trade in South America, no question. But here's a species going under. Carol in Proctor, Vermont. Carol, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I couldn't wait to call. I originally read the article in National Geographic probably a year ago.
Blood Ivory, yeah.
Yes, and I can't remember, and it just really affected me. I actually went and bought the book and spent some time reading it. But I have to tell you, in that further pursuit of information, I was shocked at the level of, I guess I want to say, flaunting the wealth from the Chinese, showing pictures of these beautiful stores with the ivory on display that people obviously with money are buying, and I actually thought it was sick. And I think there should be some sanctions. I don't know how you find the kingpin of the whole thing, but there should be some sanctions against the Chinese and the fact that wealthy, intelligent people would buy these things and put them up in their house is just ludicrous to me. And when you read the stories of the people who have worked with the elephants for 30, 50 years dealing with the poachers and the culture and trying to help. These animals really have personalities, and how they grieve over losing members of their family, and it really is sad.
But Carol, I've got to ask you, back in the day of King Leopold and all that, when the Europeans ran the roost in Africa, they certainly pulled tons and tons and tons of ivory out of Africa.
Yeah,
look at all the piano keyboards in the world.
We're more informed now as a race. We should know better. And I don't think that it's anything like a drug trade, because in the drug trade, we're not killing things and just leaving them there. And, oh, it's just so sick. And I think it's really sad, and I wish we'd do something to the Chinese. And if I knew who to write a letter to about it, I would. But when I saw the pictures of those beautiful stores, I thought, wow, there's really something missing.
You see those beautiful stores on the one side, on the other, beheaded elephants are just with their tusks hacked out with axes, and it's a very tough to see side by side. I couldn't agree more with that, Carol. Jeff in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Jeff, you're on.
How you doing, Tom?
Okay, what do you think?
I was thinking about a different approach. You know how people are killing the animals for the tusk. Why don't we just harvest that tusk by putting animals to sleep, and then remove, you know, if we remove enough tusks, then the black market should disappear.
We'll pick it up. Richard Ruggiero, is that possible? Do elephants need their tusks to live the way they live in the wild? Could we detusk them to save their lives?
No, I don't think so. It's been suggested many times, and with some species of animals, for example, rhinoceros, that's a more likely way of addressing the demand. And I think that's the point that needs to be emphasized, and I'll get back to that in a second. But to further the point, elephants would not have evolved systems like tusks if they weren't extremely important to them. So their lives are compromised without them, and just the sheer practicality of chasing down elephants in forests and in the bush, knocking them down with a tranquilizer, mm-hmm. cutting off their tusks, it's just not feasible. But to me, the point, I think Jeff is talking about the market, and I think an important point is that, yes, indeed, anti-poaching and security of elephants is primordially important. If we can't keep the elephants alive in the immediate, none of the long-term solutions that need time to work will be effective. So if we consider anti-poaching and security, emergency medicine, yes, we need to do a much better mm-hmm. job of that. But if we don't have a good strategy for dealing with the demand side and for changing the paradigm of conservation that moves away from merely economic valuation and analysis toward a more ethical approach, that elephants are extraordinary animals that should not be reduced to lines in a balance book of a company that trades in their teeth.
But look at the scale of these markets, the market for ivory, the demand side, as you say, and the scale and pace of killing. I mean, you know what we know from the drug trade, that how much effort and time it takes to try and throw the brakes on a big market like that. I mean, I'm afraid that the rate at which these elephant populations are being killed, they'll be gone by the time you could get an ethical message out there and really bite in, Richard, to the size of these markets for ivory.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. But we need more than one tool. We need to do both simultaneously and do a better job. I've done a lot of anti-poaching work over the years, and it's dangerous, difficult work. It's a rapid solution in places where it's needed. But if that's all we do, we will lose this war. If we don't deal with, you know, it's a matter of supply and demand as well. If there will always be people who are motivated to take the risks to kill elephants if the price is high enough, and the price remains high if the demand remains high. So we have to deal with all of those things. There is not a single solution to this very complex problem.
Are we headed for a world without elephants in, I don't know, in a decade, in our lifetimes, if this doesn't change?
I don't think the complete demise or extinction of elephants within a decade is going to happen. But
lifetime?
Depends on how old you are, I guess. In my lifetime, probably not, but in some younger members of the audience, perhaps. But I think the point is that if things continue, it's the trend that counts. The numbers are staggering, admittedly, but it's the trend that as long as the status quo continues, the prognosis of anything other than disaster is very small. So, sure, elephants will exist in places that are perhaps fenced, perhaps well guarded, but that's not what elephants are. That's not what elephants should be. They should not be reduced to ghost populations.
Is that where we're headed, Brian Christie? Is that what you see?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're headed to ghost populations. I haven't heard that before, but that is where we're headed.
It is not acceptable. For listeners listening right now who want to do something, where do you point them, Brian?
I point to Secretary Kerry in terms of, as an American, the one thing that Americans can do is right. And Senator Kerry held a very brave hearing last spring, very aggressive on this issue, and he's now Secretary of State. And as you showed, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton opened the door for him to
put some pressure right there, maybe, and beyond. Brian Christie with National Geographic, Richard Ruggiero in Washington. Thanks to you both. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.